Hello and welcome to the latest Fraser of Allender podcast. My name is Mary Spowage. I'm the Deputy Director of the Fraser of Allender Institute. And joining me today are Ian Bruce from the Glasgow Council for the Voluntary Sector and Jenny Patterson, who's the Chief Executive of Breakthrough, a charity that operates in Dundee and Angus. Today we're going to talk a bit about the impact of the current pandemic and the shutdown on the voluntary or third sector. We've been seeing quite a few things about this in our various webinars, which you can catch up on our website, in terms of the support that's been available for the third sector and the role that it can have in supporting communities through the crisis and as we start to recover kind of out the other end. So turning to you first, Jenny, I was just going to ask you initially to outline for me what the impact has been of the crisis on the third sector and how you've kind of had to adapt through this period.
Yeah, thanks, Mary. In terms of the impact on the third sector, I suppose I could start off talking about my own experiences as a leader of a small organisation based up in Tayside. And I think the short answer to that is that everything changed. And just pre-lockdown, when we realised that schools were going to close, that kind of services were going to close, that we just knew that we had to start to adapt as an organisation. We're a very small organisation. We deliver a mentoring programme in secondary schools and we work with care experienced and vulnerable young people. So our entire operating model is based on face-to-face relationships in schools. So with schools closing, that meant that we had to very, very quickly start to think about a different solution so that we could keep young people connected with ourselves as an organisation, but also with mentors who up until then we had 121 young people being mentored across Dundee every single week. So we basically had a huge amount of work to do just to gather up information in relation to young people, particularly because a lot of our young people already lived in very, very challenging circumstances. And the prospect for us as an organisation, knowing that schools would not just close for the Easter holidays, but they might not reopen until after the summer holidays, meant that we were really quite concerned about their welfare and about their safety. And so that meant that keeping connection with them became so critical to us. We worked hard to gather, as I say, that information in relation to young people. We worked alongside the local authority. So we've got really good relationships with social work and with our colleagues in education. And we agreed a way of keeping in touch with people digitally. So we actually came up with 5 different methods that we could use. All our young people are so different, all our mentors are so different, that we had to try and find a number of methods that could potentially work for everyone. And that took some time, I have to say. We didn't want to rush into anything. If you put something out there digitally, it's very hard to take it back. So we had a lot of safeguards that we needed to put in place. We also had to seek consent from parents and carers. And we also wanted our young people to want this as well. So that's basically our, you know, the first 3 or 4 weeks of lockdown, that's what it looked like for us. I know we're going to talk a little bit more about the support that was around in the sector, but I certainly know that I couldn't have got to the stage where I did as quickly as I did without having the support from other colleagues and that kind of sharing of knowledge, etc. I have to say, you know, we've got about 50% of engagement from our young people, which is not what we'd hoped for, but actually that's 50, you know, over 50 young people who are still engaging with us. Actually, it's actually between 50 and 80 young people who are choosing different ways to keep in touch with us. And that means that if there's anything they want to talk to us about, if there's anything they want to talk to their mentors about, that we're there for them. And I think it's more important to say that we're there, we care. And if there's any areas of risk that's identified and picked up really, really quickly. So that's really where we're at the minute, and I know that other organisations, and myself included, we're going to have to take, you know, some decisions around, you know, potentially taking, you know, making decisions around furlough, etc. I'm really, really fortunate in that my funding comes from one source at the moment, aside from our Angus Council contract, but are predominantly funded by the Northwood Charitable Trust, who have been incredible. So our funding hasn't been impacted. So that's that we've had. We've been able to continue to do what we've been able to do with young people, and that's been great and very, very, very supported by my funder and by my board. And I guess because my whole background basically before I became the chief executive of Breakthrough was social care, I can only imagine some of the difficulties that social care charities are going through right now. And yeah, empathise with them certainly.
Yeah, and the sorts of plans and adaptations that Jenny's outlined there, I suppose, will be echoed across lots of different types of charities across the sector. So just turning to you, Ian, from a sort of overview that you have in Glasgow, what would you say the impact has been and how have people adapted? And touching a little bit on what Jenny mentioned about funding, how are you seeing sort of fundraising has been impacted by the crisis?
Absolutely. So Jenny's story, in a sense, probably isn't unusual for us. And I think that's been a lot of organisations, particularly organisations that are contract or grant funded. That's been their focus, is how they continue to deliver a service in a different way and continue to support people. Other organisations have other funding streams. Particularly, we're seeing organisations that have historically traded or done community fundraising to generate their income. That income source has been really wiped out for a lot of those organisations. So that's been really challenging. And those organisations, we've seen them in a kind of strange no man's land between the response of the public sector and the response of the private sector. So the public sector and to an extent, you know, those grant funded charities, wholly grant funded charities, have been focusing very much about how they support people and being able to look in that direction. Private enterprise, by and large, where it's had to shut down, has been able to shut down completely and furlough staff and save money. The challenge for us has definitely been in that in-between bit in the third sector, where organisations have seen income sources dry up just as the demands on them have gone through the roof and their expectation. You know, we've seen an amazing response in the city, particularly around social connection, food, challenging the non-health effects of COVID really effectively. But many of the organisations that are involved in that really torn, and GCVS isn't immune to this, really torn between having to make decisions around whether to have staff employed in your organisation and able to help, or having to furlough them so that you can afford to pay them, which is a really rubbish position to be in. More widely, we've seen a phenomenal move forward in the voluntary sector, just as we have, or the third sector, just as we have across the rest of society in terms of digital. And that's been quite powerful as well, but certainly really positive in terms of that capacity. But the real danger for some service users that they can't actually access digital. So again, just that real divide, which is so pronounced in the city. You know, Glasgow has the highest number of people in poverty of any local authority area in Scotland by some margin. So it's a real issue if the sector isn't able to reach out to them.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people listening to this podcast would be able to identify with the role that community and voluntary groups have had in supporting the most vulnerable through this crisis. And obviously, some of those organisations, as you say, are in considerable difficulty and having to make some difficult choices to be able to continue delivering those services. But just taking a wee bit of a sort of step back, it's hard to remember life before this crisis began, really. But in terms of the sort of sector in the last few years and kind of going into this crisis, what would you say was the kind of resilience, I guess, of the sector going into this? And how has that kind of affected the way it's been able to sort of weather this storm?
I think we're a really resilient sector. You know, by and large, most third sector organisations are based in communities. They're representative of communities. We are doing things that our members are doing things that are really essential on the ground. A lot of organisations have put a lot of effort into diversifying their income streams, you know, away from grant funding. So ourselves included, you know, funders, government, support organisations like us have told organisations for some time that actually diversifying their income away from funding is the way to make themselves more sustainable. Now, that is still a valid bit of advice, but actually for this particular point in time, it's not actually proven true, which is unfortunate and really challenging. I think there are some other bits in there in terms of resilience around the culture of things like restricted funding, where many charities operate on a year-to-year basis with the vast majority of their income restricted, and the challenge of that in terms of being able to build up the reserves to have the flexibility to weather occurrences like this as well. There's not really the culture of borrowing in our sector either, so that's a real challenge.
Yes, absolutely. And Jenny, I just wondered if you had any reflections about the resilience of the sector, and given your own experience sort of going into this crisis.
Yeah, I would absolutely agree with what Ian says. I think we are notoriously resilient, and I think that the storms that we've had to weather as a sector have been incredible, not least with kind of the global recession. So from 2007, where we had, and I'll go back into my social care background here, where we had enough money to deliver really high quality services and to have really, to be able to train our staff and to be able to pay our staff well, and that all changed again. And then organizations like like social care providers and other organizations too have had to adapt significantly to that. So with shrinking budgets and underinvestment, and I think there's no other way to sugarcoat it, because it's chronic underinvestment in a sector that has not been valued and felt valued. And Ian, you said that I think you used the word critical there, and I actually think fundamentally we are the sector that we're the kind of the glue that keeps our society ticking over. I think we plug gaps that policy fails, and we have communities who come together to close those gaps and to make sure that people are safe and well and supported and get what they need. And in terms of resilience, I think I'm certainly not surprised at the response to that myself and my colleagues have had to make, and how quickly we've turned that around. I think I certainly welcome the digital revolution that's taken place, and certainly appreciate as well the digital divide that exists, and even we use some of our funding to provide kind of access to technology and phone top-ups, for example, for some of our young people. So we certainly recognise that too. But I'm almost thankful that bit has happened. If there's one good thing to come out of COVID, it's forced our hand. It's forced us to be in to be a sector that have had to turn things around and do things differently. I think in the long term, it shows us what we can do from home for a start. It shows us that we can do things in a different way. And our sector, whilst I think it's amazing, you have spent so long working here, working in the third sector, but we're not known to for our agility and our ability to turn things around really quickly. But this has just shown us what we're really, really capable of, and certainly for me, I've probably never felt more proud to be part of the third sector. And the one thing I would also say is that the third sector almost implies that we're less important than other sectors, and I think what the last few months have shown us is that actually we're absolutely fundamental. What I would say coming out the other side of this crisis, it's been great to hear the First Minister today say, announce some of the kind of the easing of lockdown plans. And so that we've got a kind of a target date for schools to reopen. So that's given us a bit of glimmer of hope, etc. I'm also thinking about my colleagues who run mental health charities. I'm thinking about my colleagues who run social care charities, etc. What's going to be the long-term investment for them? Because I think it's shown how valuable we are. So there has to be something fundamentally changing, that will fundamentally change, to ensure that not only they're valued, but then they can pay their staff well, but it also reflects the societal value that they represent, if that makes sense.
It does make sense. And I think one of the features of this crisis has been that there's a number of areas of the economy that have probably been undervalued, underpaid, and not given the sort of respect that they deserve, and obviously social care workers is probably one of those, perhaps the funding for local government on economic development and all of these things, where the, you know, these are the people who've been relied upon to distribute all of these grants, you know, that have sort of kept a lot of businesses going. And I think the third sector is definitely in that sort of category as well, of an area where we're relying on these organisations very heavily right now, and certain people in society particularly. And I think that that's only going to increase as we think about how we kind of get our communities more back to normal, as we're trying to support the economic recovery. So you kind of mentioned the government there, Jenny, but just turning to Ian, a number of policy measures have been put in place to support individuals and businesses through this crisis. I just wondered what your view was of these policy responses and how they've helped support or not third sector organisations through this difficult time, where a lot of them have had their income, as you say, impacted. So in terms of, you know, how they're going to survive through this crisis, what's your view of these policy measures?
I mean, I think a lot of them are individually really good, Mary. I think, you know, the UK job retention scheme, I kind of referred to that briefly earlier on, in terms of the challenge for organisations between choosing between furloughing and not. But the reality at the same time, much though that's a challenge, the reality for many organisations is that if that furlough scheme hadn't existed, they would already have had to take, you know, more serious action with staff to reduce costs. So that's been really welcome. At a Scottish level, you know, I think Scottish Government were really, really quick compared to Westminster to get out funding for voluntary organisations. I think the money is now starting to flow in England to voluntary organisations that has actually been going out the door for a good few weeks in Scotland. We've obviously got a range of funding packages that have come out from Scottish Government. I suppose, you know, it's first of all really impressive that those came out really quickly. I think probably in an ideal world, we might have hoped that we'd have, you know, with a bit more time, they could probably have been targeted more effectively. We could have got better value from them. But actually what was needed in many cases, you know, was money out the door and quickly used. And obviously the final piece in there is probably the resilience fund that we've seen for organisations that are in dire straits. I think, you know, hopefully, you know, we've seen some organisations be able to access that and keep them afloat, which is really positive. How long we're able to sustain that for, and how long this lasts, and how many organisations might end up being reliant upon it, may be really challenging as we go forward. I suppose the other thing that's worth saying, and Jenny referenced this briefly with her funder, but I think what we've seen nearly uniformly across funders, existing, you know, independent funders of the voluntary sector, and indeed local authority funders of the voluntary sector, was very quick moves to say, you know, yes, your funding is secure, and yes, you can use it more flexibly than we'd previously discussed. And I think that's been really powerful. So we saw organisations in the city, you know, literally turn on a sixpence to move from, you know, running a community centre to delivering food packages to people, using the same money, using the same people, but a completely different service. I think that's been really, really impressive.
Yeah, and that's certainly been in what we've been hearing from some organisations, that quite a lot of funders have been so flexible about them repurposing money, or perhaps where there were certain conditions attached to their grant about using money in a particular time period. You know, people, you know, the funders have been more flexible about that. You know, so this sort of flexibility from funders is really welcome, I think, given that there's a lot of things that obviously can't happen right now, and it might be necessary for either money to be repurposed for sort of emergency support, or, you know, perhaps larger projects, capital projects, to be delayed until they're able to actually be carried out. So yeah, that sort of flexibility is sort of really welcome. I mean, I guess my reflection on some of the policy measures that have been announced to support the third sector is that they're not really, in general, there to support the third sector. So, you know, there's been business rates measures to support small businesses, which obviously now if you are claiming charitable relief, you can get access to, or if you're in a particular sector, again, there's grants that are available that can support you, but only if you're in that particular sector, but they're not sort of targeted because you are a charity or in order to support that essential service you might be delivering. We've also heard anecdotally from people that some sort of well-run charities are perhaps not getting access to things like the Resilience Fund because they have, you know, a certain level of reserve, or, you know, they're not seen as in enough of a crisis. And I guess it's just been the kind of difference between that and the support for business in some cases, where it's been sort of a bit more kind of unquestioning, whereas it seems to me that the support for the third sector has been a bit more patchy, perhaps incidental, and not necessarily recognising the role that some well-run charities are going to have in rebuilding our community. So they might be all right just now, but are they going to be there in sort of 6 months' time, particularly if their sources of funding continue to be restricted, which is quite likely, you know, in the sort of months to come. So I just wondered if you had any reflections on that.
Yeah, I think there's two bits in there, and certainly we really welcome that Scottish Government updated their guidance on the Small Business Support Fund. That makes a huge difference, particularly for small charities that have small premises. And we've already seen, you know, we've already been supporting charities in Glasgow to start claiming that, which is great. And equally, you know, for those that are in, you know, that offer, that run cafes, that run halls, that can qualify under the retail, hospitality and leisure grants, that's a huge addition. So that's really welcome. But there are other organisations that are just on the outside of that, that feel, you know, that there are organisations, for example, that run employability programs, and what they have is offices that are training venues, but that feel very much like they're very close to being a community centre, because, you know, they're used in many ways for the same things, but just the wrong side of that, and that's unfortunate. The Resilience Fund, I think you're right, and we're aware of that, and it's a really difficult one, and it goes to the heart of how deep are Scottish Government's pockets on this. You know, if at this stage, in the early stages, we are moving to save organisations that were falling into crisis in the first few weeks of lockdown, that has implications for our capacity to save organisations that actually have 3 months reserves later, if this lasts 6, 9, 12 months. And I think that's a difficult choice to make, and it's a difficult political choice to make. But it is a reality. You know, there's a real concern for us that as we start to plan an exit from lockdown, you know, the First Minister announced today, you know, we're hopefully moving into phase one next week. As that starts to come into play, if the job retention scheme finishes in October, there's going to be a number of organisations whose income streams will not be in place at that point. And that's really challenging.
Yes, absolutely. And I think there are a number of hospitality-related businesses who will feel the same, but it's quite likely that their income streams will be very much reduced for probably the next year. And they're thinking about how they can survive given this reduced level of income. But it just turned into you, Jenny. We've been talking about the government support and the grants and the funds that are available to support charities through this difficult time. But how have the sector kind of been supporting each other to get through this? Have you seen a lot of that sort of coming together? You mentioned that earlier.
Yeah, I really have. And again, it's not a big surprise that the third sector like to collaborate. We like to talk to one another and share practice, ideas and knowledge with one another. And I think more than ever, we've seen the sector come together and really kind of almost unite, because we do genuinely feel like we're all in this together. And And the fact that we've got organisations like SCBO, absolutely, you know, amazing organisation that you know, to support charities in Scotland, who turned around information for, you know, for charities very, very quickly, who have facilitated mass Zoom calls for people across a whole range of types of organisations, with, you know, whether it's about cyber resilience, whether it's about safeguarding, whether it's about, you know, organisations who support people, you know, who support homelessness or children services, etc. I think all of that has been massively welcomed, very, very well timed, and really well used. I'm also a member of a COSVO, so the Association of Chief Officers of Scottish Voluntary Organisations, and again, very, very supportive, bringing people together to support one another, to learn from one another, and to do a bit of problem solving. And even just yesterday, I had a call that was facilitated by another organisation, which brought more chief officers together just to, again, for peer support. And that was a really safe space just to vent a little bit in some cases, but also just to kind of be there for one another. And I think a lot of chief execs would say that being a leader can be quite lonely at the best of times, and when you're working at home and you're physically disconnected from everything else, has the potential to feel even more isolating. So I think everybody's Zooming very regularly, you know, and spending, you know, that sort of face-to-face time, you know, virtual face-to-face time with one another. But the actual support has been incredible, I think, and I've always felt really proud to be part of the third sector, as I said, but even more now. Definitely.
Yeah, and I think a lot of us can relate to the sort of loneliness point that you made there, Jenny, with lots of different types of organisations. But I guess I don't think any of us will be surprised that the third sector are kind of pulling together and sharing practice about how to get through this time, and how to access support, and how to adapt your services through this difficult period. So I guess just finally, this is a pretty tricky question to answer, but it would be good to know what your thoughts are, both of you. So just Ian first then. I mean, I guess what's your sort of view of what the long-term impact might be on you know, the economy or society of the crisis? And how do you see the sort of the third sector sort of featuring in that, whatever sort of, as it's been called, the new normal that we're going to get to at the other end of this crisis?
I suppose, Mary, in terms of the economy, you know, you guys can answer that better, because everything that I would say at this point is just feeding back the Institute's own information. But certainly, you know, we are anticipating quite a significant economic downturn. Some of the figures for Glasgow is that there could be as many as 100,000 jobs lost in the city. That's a huge proportion. And it's not unlikely that those jobs will hit lower income households harder than others. There are real issues for me. You know, the Resolution Foundation's identified that, you know, if you earn more, then it's far more likely that you're able to be working from home right now than those who are on minimum wage.
Yes, absolutely. So yes,
all of these types of things are really challenging. We don't know how long this will last. We don't know exactly what the impact will be, but we're certainly already seeing redundancies from organizations that are falling over and unable to get through this. From a sector perspective, we have to kind of accept that the sector will look differently after this. I think there's a little bit to make sure that we maintain the things that are important. We have seen over the last 20 years, the concentration of the income of the voluntary sector moving ever towards the top sort of 5% of charities, generating a huge proportion of the income. If that's maintained going forward, the loss of small community organisations will be absolutely devastating for communities, because these are the organisations that help people maintain social connections, that reduce social isolation at a local level, that build the capacity of communities to take action on their own behalf. And they're not easy to replace. You know, I kind of was reflecting the other day, if a cafe closes at the moment, there's a reasonable chance that someone will come along and go, actually, the economy's turned, I'm willing to take a punt on that, I'll reopen that cafe. So cafe closes, cafe reopens. If a voluntary organisation closes, it's not that quick, it's not that easy. You know, if a small organisation, 10 staff in the city closes now, serving a particular community, we could be talking half a decade before that community is able to get that kind of service back up and running effectively in their community. And I think that's really critical, because if the sort of economic impacts that we expect to happen, there will be social impacts alongside that. People, you know, there will be more people needing support. And that for me is about how we make sure that the voluntary sector is there and able to offer that support and part of the rebuilding. There's an opportunity in some of this. You know, as we rebuild our economy, is there an opportunity to build a fairer economy? Is there an opportunity to build an economy that has an increased percentage of the economy delivered by social enterprise, where actually the profits of private endeavor are returned into communities? That would be a really powerful change within our economy. But it will take both a lot of work on behalf of the sector, but it will also take a political commitment on behalf of government to support that and facilitate that.
Yes, absolutely. And what you sort of mentioned at the start of your answer is obviously a concern that quite often these sorts of downturns, and certainly seems to be manifesting itself in the sort of sectors and people who are impacted, will affect the vulnerable. Younger people, women, you know, it'll affect those people who are already at a disadvantage, and sort of the fear would be, I suppose, that it would exacerbate already existing inequalities in their society. So you know, that would be the sort of thing that government would want to think about when they're thinking about how to emerge from lockdown, as well as what sort of economic recovery they would want to see. So just turning to Jenny then, I mean, I don't know if you have any reflections on what the crisis might mean for the long term, sort of the way that our society or our economy works, and what role the third sector might have.
I think looking to the long term is a little bit frightening for us at the minute. I think you know, things are changing all the time, and actually we don't even know what things are going to look like whenever we come through these next few phases of easing of lockdown. And I think certainly for me, I'm expecting those young children and young people who are living in poverty to come out, you know, even more disadvantaged than they did at the beginning. So I'm fearful about the mental health again of our nation. You know, I'm thinking about the spike that there's been in domestic abuse, the spike that there is in family breakdown, and also in homelessness just in the last few weeks. So I'm concerned, and as a sector, you know, we need to be able to meet that challenge alongside our partners in government, and the funding and the investment absolutely needs to be there to enable us to meet that challenge. And what I would really love to see is that our sector feels much more like an equal partner rather than the peer relation, that we feel that we do feel valued, that just because, you know, we some of our staff are paid a certain wage does not mean that they are unskilled. Actually, we work in such a highly regulated, highly scrutinised environment with some of the most complex pieces of work that we do. So I would absolutely love to see that shift. And tonight we'll be all standing out clapping our key workers. And actually, that's a great thing, you know, to acknowledge that. But let's do something about it to really show people that we value them and value the contribution that they make. But I really like the idea, as Ian says, about this triggering kind of a longer kind of social change, about a fairer society, a fairer economy, and just I would love to see some of the debate around that and what that might look like going forward.
Thanks for that, Jenny. Yeah, and that's a sort of a nice place to sort of finish up on. I agree that it will be important that some of these gestures that people are doing during the lockdown period, so they don't appear as fairly tokenistic, should sort of translate into more longer term change of our view of people like social care workers and others in terms of the professional job that they do. So I wouldn't disagree with that at all. So I'd just like to thank Ian and Jenny for joining me today and having this conversation about the third sector. We'll be doing more work on this sector in coming weeks, so look out for that if you're interested. You can subscribe to our podcast through all the major podcast streaming platforms, and you can keep up to date with our analysis on the Scottish economy, on the UK economy, and on the coronavirus pandemic at fraserofallander.org. So thanks for listening, and we'll see you again soon for another edition of the Fraser of Allander podcast.